Well, guys, I want to thank you for tuning in to the Youth and Culture Podcast, where youth ministry and culture collide. I'm your host, Ryan Sebastian, and I am joined with my co-host, David Pinkman.
Hey, man, it is good to be back. It has been an interesting beginning of the year.
Yes, it has. It's been ridiculously busy.
Yeah, hit the ground running, man.
Oh, yeah, in a good way. Busy in a good way. Just consuming. We've tried to talk the last meet together and the last few weeks and schedule something. Something gets in the way and have to reschedule. Something gets in the way. It's just part of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I had 6 meetings last week between teens and adults, and it's just ministry is busy and ministry is full.
Yeah. Earlier this week, I had basically 2 days straight of Zoom call meetings. So, like when we would take our breaks, we all just went on mute and turned our cameras off and then walked away for like 30 minutes and did whatever we needed to do.
I don't miss the constant Zoom meetings.
Yeah. Do you remember back when, the shutdowns like hit and all of us were scrambling to figure out how to do youth group on Zoom?
Yes.
Whew, I'm glad that's over.
Yeah. I kind of had a plan with that.
Just survive because, is not a plan.
The reason why, because we use Zoom. I was remember the podcast was still going on at that time, so I use Zoom a lot. This is before we use some of the platforms we use now. Mm-hmm. So very familiar with Zoom. Nobody else really heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just took advantage of it and just used it early on before anybody else told me to or was talking about using Zoom. And then Zoom comes out with this nice little feature where you can actually meet together and put people in groups.
Yeah, like small groups.
Yeah, so that was kind of neat. So we met together and then we split them off. But I still would never want to relive that again.
Oh, gracious. I remember, if you can recall, when I joined the podcast as the second host, you and I recorded that week and you scheduled it and put it out. And because you always have it, like, I think you submitted on what, Thursday night? So it goes live on Friday or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you scheduled it Thursday night, and Friday we woke up and the shutdowns hit.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And I don't remember who I don't remember. I'll have to think harder, but somebody I was talking to, and I was like, you know, we should probably get a license for Zoom so we can have multiple people, because you have to pay for that if you want more than 2 people with unlimited meeting time. And they're like, nah, we're only going to be using it for like a couple weeks. And I was like, I'm going to go ahead and get it.
Yeah, so by that time, since I was using Zoom consistently with meeting with other youth pastors across the country and doing stuff with podcasts, I already had a subscription at that time. So because most of my meetings were in range between 45 to an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Depending on the meeting. So, yeah.
Well, now we use Zencastr because the audio quality is excellent.
Plus, it's designed for podcasters.
Yeah, it is.
But I'm really excited about our topic today, as we talk about small groups. And we're going to be talking about, of course, we talked about small groups from a larger church perspective. Mm-hmm. But we also go around and start talking about specifically student ministry. And we talk about discipleship strategies and all this put together. So we had an awesome time talking to Adam Ehrlichman.
Mm-hmm.
Good friend of ours. We've known him for a long time. We actually lost, at least I did, I lost out of touch with him for many years, as he was pastoring in other parts of the country. And it was kind of neat that we haven't seen each other in, I don't know, it seemed like 10 years, something like that.
That's kind of what it felt like.
10 years since seminary, and we all served in same church in Lynchburg, Virginia. All went to the same Sunday school class during that time. And it was kind of neat to see things go completely circle, and we got reconnected with him just out of the blue, out from an email that somebody just sent us.
I know that it's encouraging to reconnect with an old friend like that, but I think it's also encouraging to know that people that are part of our like cohort, if you want to put it that way, are still staying faithful. Because I don't know if you've experienced this, Ryan, but there was a period of like 2 years probably about 5-6 years into our marriage, that, because we've been married for like 12 and a half years now. And I think it was like 5 or 6 years in, it felt like a bunch of our peers were just dropping like flies. Like they were getting divorced, or stuff, people getting sick, or splitting up, family drama. Just like there was all this stuff happening that was super negative. People were leaving the faith, and they were all like our age, people that we had gone to college with and kind of done life with for a while. And then it just kind of hit the fan. And we came out of those couple years like looking at each other like, what is happening with our friends? And it's, I mean, it's, I feel like it's gotten a little better. But it's nice to know that, you know, our people are still, there's still people out there that are staying faithful and still pursuing the Lord, still pursuing the church. And you mentioned this, this will come up in the conversation with Adam, but you kind of mentioned it just a second ago. And I think it's something that's worth kind of highlighting as we go into this. But although we are a youth ministry podcast, we do have to look at the things that we do with youth ministry in the context of the broader church in general, because what we do in the youth ministry affects the rest of the church, and what the rest of the church does affects the youth ministry. So it is a symbiotic relationship, if you want to put it that way, a partnership. But it is something that you can't just, if you remember Doc Brown telling us this in college, you can't silo your ministries.
No.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. And we've had this many, many times at the podcast. It is, again, you got to ask this question of what's good and what's better.
Mm-hmm.
What's good and what's better. I'm always going to lean to the side of what's better.
Yeah.
So having a silo ministry, is it okay? Is there some good things have come out of it? Yes. But is it better? No. And we're starting
is it to best? See, definitely not.
No. And we're starting to see some of that come out, because youth ministry is fairly new, and so we're starting to see the ramifications of that now, of people walking away the faith, each generation being more and more unreached, Gen Z being the least reached generation of all time. So we're seeing elements of that now,
but also the most open.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct. The most spiritually open for anything spiritual.
Yeah.
But so they're not closed off like our generation before, but at the same time, they're most unreached. So we're seeing all these signs. Mm-hmm. We're seeing more and more people walking away from the faith, again, which is connected to how they were discipled as teenagers, children, teenagers. Because now they're adults now. Mm-hmm. So all this is effective for how youth ministry was done in 60s, 70s, and 80s, and early in 90s. We're seeing the outcome of that. People walking away the faith, churches dying all over the country. So we're seeing the ramifications of that now, of how, and again, it's not just student ministry. There's a lot more elements to it, but student ministry is a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
To where it was siloed. Kids don't know what it means to be part of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Discipleship wasn't necessarily a focus, even though we say it was. Wasn't really. It was more entertainment, fun.
The buzzword.
Yes, and again, and we talk, we hash this out later. All that's great, but silo ministry is not the best. The best is look at discipleship holistically, and how can we get students to understand that they're part of the body of Christ, part of the church, and all that, and. One, my philosophy, not saying that my philosophy is the way, it's just the
this
way.
Is the way.
It's just, yeah, it's just what I personally believe is the best way based off scripture, based off of current research that's coming out of Fuller Institute, Lifeway, and many others, that getting families to do things together, like instead of doing a youth outreach event, it was just students. How about we just do families, get families together, serving together across the church and doing it together, doing mission trips together. Instead of just doing just a teen mission trip or a student mission trip, how about we do one that's geared towards families serving together overseas? It's just different elements of stop siloing ministries mm-hmm. and start joining in with the church as a whole, with the body of Christ as a whole. Mm-hmm. That's what the church is. The church is not filled with just adults. The church is from kids all the way to adults. It's not either or. So to continue that mindset in how we serve, how we do ministries across the board, and eliminate that mentality even when it comes to our ministries.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the body analogy, it's really hard to stick all the arms in one room and expect them to walk around and do anything effective.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So anyway, with that being said.
Yeah, well, guys, stay tuned as we talk to Adam Lerkman. Well, guys, I am super excited to be interviewing and talking with Adam Lerkman. Adam is actually, I think 10 years ago, last time we actually talked, because we were both in the same Sunday school class at a church we were both at during seminary. Now he's doing other things in church ministry and now in leading discipleship ministries. I'm very excited for us to have an opportunity to talk with Adam because you just released a new type of training and curriculum specifically on discipleship. But before we hash into that, how about you introduce yourself a little bit, your story, and where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ryan. Very glad to be on and hang out with y'all. It was funny, my PR manager, she reached out and I guess got us connected and all that good stuff. And I was like, I know this guy. We were in Sunday school class together in Lynchburg, Virginia, right? And so this is just a great kind of reconvening of old fellowship and continued fellowship and friendship. So grateful you guys have me on here just for us to reconnect even just at that level. So a little bit about me. I'm originally from the Northeast. I always got to lead with that because I live in Texas. Or else people feel like I just kind of, pulled a fast one on them, right? And so born outside of Philadelphia, grew up in an amazing home with incredible parents, invested a lot into me. Didn't grow up a Christian or going to church regularly. Didn't receive the gospel or believe that until I was about 19 years old. So, I'm sitting in Elmer Towns' New Testament 101 class going, who's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? And why do these guys matter? How's everyone acing this class? And I'm just learning all this. And right. So that was sort of my biblical illiterate background coming into it. And, 21 years old, called to ministry. I left school at 20 to go work and make money and was loving doing that instead of spending it to learn about what I wanted to do. I got to do what I wanted to do while making money. And so then the Lord's like, well, I'm call you to ministry. And so I go back, finish that. And we were at Heritage Baptist Church in Lynchburg with y'all. And I mean, such a formative time of my life in that church. So, so good with people like you guys and Jared Stillings and Pastor Jeff and Pastor Nathan. I mean, so many great influential people for me in my life. And so, yeah, we served in, lay capacity, served teaching in the discipleship community is what they called them. Served in young adult college ministry, came down to Greenville, Texas, and did student ministry there. And then from there went and did groups at adult ministry level, life groups, discipleship. And then from there, our last stop before I'm doing what I'm doing now, served as an executive discipleship pastor at a rather large church, all down really in the Dallas area is our last two churches we've been on staff with, or I've been on staff with. And now I'm a full-time church consultant with Build Groups. Started about 4 years ago. Wasn't seeking to start a consulting business to help churches with their groups discipleship process or how to solve the volunteer crisis. That's not something I was like, I'm going to do that one day. It just sort of happened through a conference we started that a lot of people began coming to and said, wow, this guy must know what he's talking about if he's having this, group leader conference. And and said, well, maybe, maybe not, but it has worked out so far. So that's a little bit about my background and ministry. My wife is Anna. We've got three boys, Judah, Titus, and Deacon, 10, 8, and 6. They're my first and most important discipleship ministry that I get to do amongst working and helping many other churches as well. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
That's awesome. I've also got a deacon.
So let's go.
That's pretty cool, man. That's cool. Hoping he grows up to become a pastor so we can call him Pastor Deacon. or maybe even get his doctorate and so we can call him Dr. Pastor Deacon Pinkham.
What about Deacon Deacon?
Deacon. Ooh, becomes a deacon. Yeah, you'd be a sneaking deacon. hey, man, it's good to see you again. But just to kind of kick it off, because I know that we'll get to the youth part eventually, but as you look at the church overall, you kind of already mentioned like the volunteer crisis, but why is training the small group leaders themselves critical to the impact and growth of a church?
Yeah, certainly. I get this question a lot. So with groups ministry in particular in the local church, it is the tide that raises all ministry ships. Groups is the lifeblood that pumps into every other ministry, because if you have a strong groups ministry, if you have a groups ministry that is working on discipling people, maturing people, equipping people, then you're going to have stronger people to go into those different ministries, to volunteer in kids, to volunteer in student ministry, or whatever ministry that may or may not be, right? And so for me, it's, man, when you have a strong groups ministry, when you have the majority of your church in a group, growing in a group, maybe serving through that group or being sent out to go serve into another ministry like student ministry, it is just going to strengthen everything else. And so there's a lot of different conversations, nuances we could have about that, but by and large, that's why it is so important.
Yeah, when I think about the training of the small group leaders, the other question that comes up is, okay, if we don't have specific training for them, then how are they going to know what to do? Like, what are the other options in the church? And the only other option I can think of is, well, you sit in a sermon or you try to get the pastor to teach you something in a one-on-one meeting. That's really the only other options I can think of other than getting a group together and doing some concerted training to help them be what they need to be for the group. But look, what kind of training do you do? Is it biblical literacy, the ability to teach the Bible, or is it beyond just the scriptural aspect of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll back up for a second. I'll speak to just kind of the focus of why training leaders, you know, and how going about that and why that's so important, because I have found again and again, and this wasn't like Adam set out to just do something different because he wanted to be different. I just didn't know anything else. I just thought, well, hey, this is what I've been discipled in. This is what I've learned. This is what I see when I read the Bible and when I read some of these other, you know, leadership type development books in ministry and Christian ministry and leadership. And so I enter into this world of groups ministry and getting to connect with a lot of different guys. And what I find again and again is that their model is, let's find a bunch of people, let's start a group, and then we'll try to find a leader to, you know, shepherd or facilitate that group. And when I look at the New Testament, I'm going, man, I feel like that may be backwards, because what we saw Jesus do was for 3.5 years, right? He selected his disciples. He invested into them deeply. He spent less and less time with the masses, more and more time with the few. And then by the time that 3.5 years, you know, finished, he sent them out to go and multiply the mission that he himself came on to do. And so for me, it's first and foremost, man, we got to focus on discovering, developing, deploying new group leaders. And when we do that, new groups will start and then new people will join those groups. And what you do in that, right, second leg of the three-legged stool, I call, right, discover, develop, deploy. For develop, you have to have holistic training. You have to have holistic training, and not just that in content, but you need to have also a consideration of how are we doing the training, right? How am I not just, am I telling you, or am I modeling for you what this should look like? And so like if you are a small group leader And the primary way that you are going to lead is through discussion and asking questions. Well, being lectured at for 60 minutes is not a good way to model, right, that training. Yeah. So instead, that training should look like, if they're going to lead 8 to 12 students in a small group with discussion, well, then that's how you should train them, right? You should train them in that same setting so they not just get the information, but they get the experience. Not just the explanation, but the experience. And so, you know, content-wise, go back to answering your question, David. What I saw with a lot of different small group books, which I've got a shelf back here. I think it's that one. I think it's that one right there I was pointing at. It's like all my small group books. And what you see is that there's so many good things in all of these books. I struggled when I was doing adult groups ministries, just kicking off going, to find a holistic one that hit the head, you know, kind of rich scripture, deep theology, heart that was in that, woven in, you know, care and biblically counseling people with the hands of, you know, best practices, right, if you will. And so in this resource that, you know, I wrote and we put together over 6 years, over 1,000 different group leaders had gone through this training and collected data from up to over, I think, 1,500 people to kind of formulate that resource. We made it holistic, right? So we've got biblical instruction in a video where they fill out the work blank, fill in the blank in a workbook. There is a doctrinal assessment where they, you know, answer a few faith statements, true, false, or unsure, with a website they can go to, and they get to dive in deeper with articles or YouTube videos they can watch. And then, you know, there's the chapter reading where there's just tons of best practices that are connected with a lot of the deep theology. And so for me, that was really important. And so that those are kind of the holistic ways that we dig into in training group leaders in the resource, but then also just in general, even if I'm working with a church that I'm consulting and they want to develop their own resource, it's okay, well, what do you want them to do? What do you want them to believe or to think? What doctrines are important for them in this ministry? What do you want them to feel? That's a very rare question someone asks when they're developing a new leader. So yeah, that those are some of the things that we do whenever we're looking at training new leaders and we're considering.
Gotcha. And I'm guessing it's scalable depending on the size of the church.
Yeah. Yeah. Very scalable. And so there's a lot of ways to break it up. So if you know, kind of zoom out, I was talking more, you know, content and process of things that are important you want to have in that to discover, develop, deploy new group leaders. You know, I work with churches that are 8,000, 2,000, 200, you know, even as low as, I mean, 50 to 100 I've worked with before too. So, you know, there's no discrimination towards any church size. A lot of times what you find is that the large church has the exact same issues as the small church, which is discouraging to the large church, but encouraging to the small church.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you asked that question, because a lot of times, and this is not always the case, but not all resources is written in a way that is meant for all size churches. And so, yeah, so I'm glad you asked that question. And also, we're talking about discipleship and small groups. One thing I like what you're hearing, or what I'm hearing, and it's very true, is this concept of reproducing leaders. One thing, like even right now, we've shared in the podcast, right now at my church, my overall discipleship strategies, discipleship pathway, we built that and where we're going as a church. But also part of that is replicating leadership, because that's within small groups, even elder leadership, pastoral leadership, just replicating leaders. And because to me, the linchpin per se of a healthy, good church, a longevity of ministry, is if you're actually creating or building up next generation of pastoral, elder, small group leaders in your church. Because if you're not, in my opinion, biblically, you're actually not fulfilling your role of what the church should be. So I'm glad you're talking about replicating leaders. And this next question, one question I do want to ask, I think me, David, you, of course, you, Adam, we kind of know the answer to this question, but maybe for those who are listening and may not know what a small groups look like, what's healthy, what are some practices of a healthy small group?
Yeah, so I keep it really simple. You know, there's nothing new under the sun, and I don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Yep.
And when we try to do that, it usually just turns into like a square wheel. We're like, look how awesome this is. It's a square wheel. And you're like, yeah, that doesn't work. So the, you know, for small groups and healthy practices of a healthy small group, you just go back to scripture, right? Acts 2, 42 through 47. That is the bedrock best passage that you're going to find that describes this is what a healthy small group, and a lot of times, I mean, what a healthy church is. And right. And so it's typically around four or five things. And you could pull out several from that passage. Fellowship, devote themselves to the apostles' teaching, right? Growth, growing, sold their belongings as any had need. That's service. That's the principle there, that they're serving one another. The fellowship that came out of, you know, they gathered in the temple in their homes daily. Right. And then the last one is as a result of how they were fellowshipping, growing, and serving one another, the result was, and how they did it was important too, right? It says they did it with glad and generous hearts.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't do it. Yeah. There are some crusty Christians. I'm telling you. They're like, I've been doing this for 20 years and I hate it. I don't really like people, but I'll do my ministry every week. And, you know, but how we do is just as important as what we do. And, mm-hmm. So did it with glad and generous hearts that was worshipful. And as a result, you see in verse 47, that as they fellowship, they were growing, they were serving, the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. So then you saw multiplication. And a small group that multiplies, where there's a gospel goodbye and someone goes to begin their own group, is a huge mark of a healthy group as well. So those are some of your base ones. Now, when you get more into the micro level, right? You look at fellowship and growth. You can get more into the micro level. And again, I don't need to invent anything. This is just the biblical practices we see. There's these phrases called the one another's in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. There's about 60 of them. And of those one another's, it in the New Testament, it was describing or prescribing, if you will, what Christian community should look like, what it should or shouldn't look like. And so it's, you know, love one another, encourage one another, greet one another, care for one another, instruct one another, do not provoke one another to anger, be patient with one another. And so all these different one another's are even beyond, you know, or even a little bit deeper from those kind of big four that I gave you, fellowship, grow, serve, and multiply. You go deeper into that, and those are sort of your micro level. This is what you behaviorally, literally, are to do and to conduct yourself in the Christian life to edify one another. So you're like, I don't know how to fellowship. Well, there it is, one another's. So those are the big healthy practices that you can look at in a biblical sense. And you're going to go, okay, hey, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, one thing, and again, there's different philosophies on this, and there's not necessarily anything's wrong. I think, because one thing that I think a lot of people get hung up on when it comes specifically small groups, specifically that, and you can go beyond this, is that in a sense of this is the way. In other words, this is the way you should do it. When you're in reality, as long as you're in the realm of what you see in Acts and what you see all throughout the New Testament, what it means going up in the one another's, that can happen in different contexts of community. It doesn't necessarily, even though I believe, and with all my heart, that it's that a small group of 6, 10, no more than 15 people is the best, but it can happen in a traditional Sunday school style as well. And that's I think that, again, we all like to read the next new books. You should be reading the next new books, learning new things. But at the same time, you got to understand that community happens in multiple ways. Mm-hmm. And healthy groups is in different sizes and different contexts. So I think when we're, and Adam, you can dive into this more if you want to, but I think we can easily get hung in to this idea of this is the way, when in reality, your context, who your people are in your culture, your church culture, and your community culture, your way you do community has to fit your niche of where you're at.
100%. I could not have said it better myself, man. and there has been a historical sin in the group's world. And I'm using a strong word, but it is. I think it's a sin. This is the way. And so we've taken orthopraxy, right? Practice of ministry, and we have elevated it to orthodoxy or like some type of dogma. Like this is the only way. And in reality, the Bible left these things wide open to apply them in your specific cultural context and the means that makes the most sense. And so when I work with a church in Dallas, Texas, it's going to be way different than the church that I might work with in Boston, Massachusetts. Right? I mean, it's totally different context. Why? Because in Dallas, you still have a lot of your Christendom and people are very, you know, friendly and good with Christians. In Boston, Massachusetts, it's a little more hostile. And so at a practical level, having open groups in Dallas is a really safe thing. Open groups in Boston, Massachusetts is not a safe thing. To list it online and for any person to just show up to the home or to reach out, never meet them, and then direct them to a home group and so, you know, someone's residence, that can be dangerous because they're going to show up and just try to disrupt it because they're an enemy of the gospel and the ministry of what we're trying to achieve. And that's real stuff, right? So just at a very practically felt need level, that's one example. The historical sin that I think as well with the small group world has been that we have gotten so married and so concerned, kind of like organizational leadership, with structuring groups ministry, that we have almost abandoned the shepherding or the, this is what actually happens inside of a group. Qualitatively, less so about, hey, here's your structure, here's your model, here's how you set things up. Like those are good and important things. Don't get me wrong. And I'm thankful for all the different resources that are out there. But a big reason why I made the resource that I did was because I was like, man, I don't feel like anyone is really hitting or going after what groups should look like when you are in the meeting. Like at an interpersonal level and the things that are going on there, the relationships, how you're building those relationships, how you're forging them, how you are helping draw things out of people, investing into them, leading them through to grow and to take next. How are you helping mobilize someone to take their next step in their discipleship journey to begin serving, to begin sharing their faith? Those were next steps in the discipleship journey for Jesus' disciples. And so a lot of groups are just, hey, we're going to fellowship, we're going to study the Bible, we're going to fellowship, we're going to study the Bible. And there's a lot of consuming, but there's never a step into the contribution. And so for me, I'm going, man, I really want to dive into at an interpersonal level for someone who has led groups prior to being on a church staff, having all these group leaders are like, man, how do I handle this? How do I handle this? I wanted to give something biblically practical and understandable for the lay leader to apply immediately into their small group context. And so, yeah, it would just go off what you said. There are ways, but not the way, you know, of how to do groups. And it's good to have the humility to just have open hands on that.
So if there's somebody that's listening to this right now and thinking, okay, I think we might be stuck in one of those, like we've always done it this way kind of situations. Or even they may find themselves where they've either become, or they have a leader who just, he's like, I'll just do it all myself kind of attitude. Do you have any advice for those guys to how to start changing or breaking that mold without, you know, the apple cart spilling over, but trying to move it towards the group effort, the getting other people to step up and take those next steps, finding those leaders? Like, what advice would you give somebody who's in a situation that they realize, I want to do it all myself, or I have a leader who wants to do it all myself?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, when you go on staff at a new church, you have people been there and they're kind of set in their ways. And so you know, Robbie Gallaty, he had this really great quote that stuck with me for such a long time. He's like, you know, you know, with leaders who aren't doing the things that you want them to do, you know, it's kind of like a stump in the backyard and you're mowing. You can either mow around it or you can blow it up and a bunch of shrapnel goes everywhere. Right. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to mow around it and it'll just take care of itself. And so I think what happens a lot of times is there's, you know, one or two options, right? Eventually they're going to get on board. And so my focus had always been at a church that I'm just going to discover, develop, and deploy new group leaders to the point where the majority of our leaders have come through under my watch, right? Have come through under my training. And so the vast majority of those leaders were on board with what we were doing. And so if you weren't on board, you were a minority. And not to, you know, whatever, it's not a, in a sense to like manipulate or anything like that or make anyone feel left out, but it's like, hey, at some point, like we're on mission and we're moving and this is biblical and we want you to get on board with us. There's always an open invitation.
That makes sense. So what, you mentioned Acts already, but I was wondering if you had any other kind of areas in scripture that helped provide the foundation for having healthy small groups outside of the passage that you mentioned in Acts.
Yeah, another big one is Ephesians 4, 11 through 16, right? As you look at that passage, it's really clear that the pastor, the teacher, the preacher, right, shepherd, they're not to be doing the work of ministry. They're to be equipping the saints to do the work of ministry. And so even at a group leader level, it's their job to equip people to fulfill their ministry. And so that's why it's like so easy a lot of times to enlist new group leaders, because it's like, man, I want you to explore what God is calling you to. I'm not trying to meet my ministry quota for the volunteers that I need. It's not about me. It's I've been put here to help you discover what God's called you to. That might be groups ministry, it might be student ministry, it might be something off campus, you know, serving in a nonprofit ministry. And hey, praise God for that. We're all working to build the kingdom. But as far as, you know, helping someone to move forward in that, and discovering that and to use that, Ephesians 4, 11 through 16 is so clear. It's, hey, we're trying to help mature people into the first full stature of Christ. And
that's awesome.
The last verse, this is the key one, right? This is the one that's like, hey, all hands on deck, 15 and 16, when every part of the body is working properly together, it builds itself up in love. And so it's every single one of you are needed.
Yeah. And I've found it can be hard to convince people of that truth because their feelings get in the way. So if you take all the things that we just talked about, that's all kind of meta, big church, the whole church as a whole. How do you translate that into working in the context of the youth ministry? Because we mentioned this before we started recording. There's small groups for the adults, like on Sunday morning, that's kind of a typical time. Some do like the home groups, like you mentioned. But when the youth group has like their main meeting time, for a lot of youth groups, there's a small group element to it, which looks kind of like a miniature version of the church overall. So how would all of this work within the context of the student ministry?
Certainly. So I've seen this in my own, you know, church context, and I've seen it in others. So using the group leader training resource, right, primarily it's to take potential new adult group leaders through. Now, we had existing leaders who would go through because they're like, hey, I just want to go through and you know, get some of this myself too and kind of sharpen the axe, which was great. And had, you know, senior pastors of 20 years and church planters and other pastors to go through that training with us, and they loved it. And it was really, really helpful to them. But we also included potential new student ministry group leaders. And so we kind of streamlined. And so they would come in and they would get training as well. And they found so much value in it, and they would go back and just, man, I mean, just add a ton of value into that ministry that they weren't going to get, right? At this type of a level, to facilitate that type of a training or to take them through a student pastor, in a lot of ways, I mean, you're running like a whole nother church inside of a church, you know, is
that's what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah. Like truly, right. It is the ultimate preparation to lead pastor one day. Cause you feel like you're running a church inside of a church, unless you're at this really large one with this large team and all these just different, you know, arms of departments that can help do your communications and your graphic design or your, you know, whatever, administration. So, you know, taking this into the student ministry, it was more so, hey, let your student ministry small group leaders come to that in combination with adult ministry. But I mean, at the same time, like a student ministry could just use that resource and train their leaders with it. And what I found, and here, this is, you know, man, this is probably going to go off into a little rabbit trail. You know, you guys already gave me permission, so I appreciate it.
Go for it.
No apology. I just received the open blessing to do that. So, you know, for me, when I did student ministry, and I've seen it even being outside of it, most especially your high schoolers, they're sick of being entertained and they want to be engaged. And so when we say, hey, high schooler, you know, sophomore, junior, senior in high school, whatever grade you're in, you can go through this group leader training with adults. We're telling them you are the church now. And you can be equipped and you can serve and invest into other teenagers, maybe middle schoolers or even kids. Like, you can do that right now. And so one of the things that I found again and again in student ministry was, man, when you were willing to engage them at a level that you invested them in into them that was meaningful, and it had, right, meaningful ministry that was produced out of the training that they were getting to do, and they got to go and use those gifts to pour into other people, to see life change in other teenagers or middle school preteens, whoever it was, like, that was just, that made them so hungry. It brought them to life. It just awakened something in them that you're like, I didn't see that before. I didn't even know that was in there. And so what I've gotten to see is some of that type of just focus to train and to invite teenagers to come and be a part of that. I've gotten to see some things that are just, I mean, beautiful. You're like, I didn't know, but now, you know, we've got to see that this is exciting.
It's amazing what they'll, if you raise the bar and you clearly define it, it's amazing how many teenagers will meet that.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, just give me the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
And give them the chance to rise. I mean, yeah, the amount of things that teenagers can learn, and they do learn in school compared to what we think they can or can't learn in a student ministry, there's a huge discrependency there. Ooh. Right? And maybe I'm stepping on
some
toes.
That's a whole other conversation.
I'm a back up. I might be stepping on some toes. But anyways.
Well, go ahead. Stomp on them.
I'm glad he's talking about also the entertainment aspect, because one thing me and David preach about all the time is how you attract teenagers is how you keep teenagers. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if your ministry is built around an attractional model to where it's entertainment, fun, and all those things are fine. Absolutely fine to have fun. In fact, you need to have a fun element in any type of ministry, whether it's adults, kids, whatever.
Fun and fundamentalism.
Because God created laughter, so use laughter, use fun. But anyway. Yeah, David.
Sorry.
But yeah, so but if you attract kids that way, and that's how you keep them. So in other words, what's better? Is it better to have an attractional model to where you have 200-300 kids, which is great? I think every student pastor, youth pastor listening would be floored if you had 200-300 kids in your student ministry. So all of us desire that, but we got to look at what is ultimately better. What is the student ministry part of, as part of the church? What is the church meant for? It's meant to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. Why you meet on Sundays is for encouragement, worship, and being sent out with the gospel. That's what it's meant for. And student ministries need to also, as part of the church, that needs to be the model that's also done within student ministry. So I think my encouragement always is to shift from attractional model and shift to a discipleship model. So where your focus, you still have fun, but your focus is equipping parents first and foremost, equipping them, helping them, partnering alongside them in discipling their kids, and then pouring and equipping into your leaders to help disciple those kids in your ministry, and then students come next in discipling, equipping them. And it goes in that order. When you have a discipleship mindset, a holistic ministry, we're talking about church as a whole, it needs to be holistic discipleship, not siloed discipleship. Mm. It needs to be holistically how you do it. When you do that, you'll have kids, parents who are on fire, kids who are on fire, but you may not have the numbers. We're talking about, you may have the numbers that you desire to have, because you'll have kids who are not apathetic. You'll have parents who are not apathetic. You have kids who want to be there, kids whose parents want them there. And again, Greg Steer wrote a great article for Christianity Today, I think 6 months back, but he said in there, so he said, what if we spent majority of our time with kids who want it instead of kids who are apathetic? What difference would you make within your community when you spend majority of your time not with apathetic kids, but kids who want it? So again, I think it's refocusing also how on discipleship model and discipleship thinking of how you do student ministry as well.
I could not agree more. And what I find, I've been at the Incarnational Church, I've been at the Attractional Church, and what I see is we can almost at times cultivate apathy in these teenagers with just giving them sugar and hype and energy drink type ministry. And they want meat, man. Like, they want the Bible, they want scripture, they want doctrine, they want deep relationship. They want something that lasts and doesn't just give them us kind of hype for an hour or two. And so, you know, for us, we're big family discipleship, right? Invest in kids at home. And, you know, that's maybe not always the case. You might not have Christians at home or something like that, but, you know, and so the church is essential, and having strong parents discipled in a group's ministry, right? Again, that overflows and feeds into your student ministry. And so I'm not anti-attractional. I'm not, you know, I'm not like, hey, you know, there are benefits to it. The thing is, if you are going to be, there has to be an intentional point in that ministry that is purposeful, where they transition from fun or attractive to meaningful steps towards discipleship, right? And so the reason why I think training group leaders, inviting teenagers and students into doing that, or having really well-trained adults, because if you train them well on the front end, you can have a lot of trust on the back end. Mm. If you don't invest a lot on the front end, you make a lot of mess and maintenance ministry opportunities for yourself. And that's like, that's not fun. You don't take ground there. You are feel like you're constantly losing ground because you're always trying to just clean up the mess that you should have at the front, probably handled that better and given clear expectations, good training. And so, you know, when you do that and you invest, that makes a totally different atmosphere for your student ministry. And you make the space, the opportunity for them to go from sugar, hype, energy drink into meat. Texas smoked brisket, even in North Carolina, man, they want it there too, right?
Oh, man.
Yes, got it. Texas barbecue is way better. Way better.
North Carolina barbecue sauce, though, that vinegar.
No. Sorry. Half my family is from Texas. You can't beat Texas barbecue.
I was raised in North Carolina. You can't beat our sauce.
And shots have been fired. We may have lost a few listeners there. So,
so Adam, if people wanted to get a hold of your, just learn more about you and also get a hold of this training, and I believe you wrote a book too, and as well, where's the best way to get connected with these things?
So you can go to our website, www.buildgroups.net. And that'll take you and help you navigate to whatever you want to learn, whether it's consulting, whether it's the books. We've got several different books. We've got personal reads, how we grow, a few church resources on why membership matters, why we gather for corporate worship, the necessity of it. And then the big one right now, and what we've spent the majority of this time talking about, is the group leader training. And so those are all available exclusively on Amazon, but you can go to buildgroups.net and you can learn more. There's informational pages, FAQs. I actually made a website for the spouse of the husband I would meet with who was considering going through the new group leader training. I'd be like, hey, because your wife's not here and you're not going to remember 98% of what I told you and your wife's going to get mad at you, for the sake of your marriage, here's an informational website page that you can share. And so, you know, pastors, church leaders, if you're wanting to learn more in depth and have questions, there's a whole website there for that resource, the group leader training.
Well, Adam, I want to thank you for coming out on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun. This was really fun. Thank you.
Well, guys, I am super thankful for Adam. I'm thankful for his heart. Man, just his willingness to pour in to the discipleship model with small groups. Mm-hmm. Very thankful for him. It's just one resource of many that we can use and we can utilize. But one thing I love about Adam is Adam is striving to take multiple things, multiple concepts. And he talked about how he has a whole bookshelf full of talk about small groups. I take all these things and makes it more practical for us to utilize and view and implement. And again, that can be structured depending on the size of your church, your culture, all that, but it takes the basic principles and how to apply it.
Yeah. And I know that, I don't know how you feel. There's certain things that like eventually become buzzwords in church mm-hmm. culture. And one of them that's been gaining a lot of popularity in the last 10, 15 years has been the small group, the word small group. I have small groups, join a small group, be a part of small group, life group, home group, you know,
connect
groups, you know, all that. Ooh, yeah. But like, we're not trying to like, this isn't like a bandwagon thing. This isn't like a trend. It's if you strip away all the fancy stuff, basically the whole point of getting serious about small groups is because that's how you get the relationships. That's how you get the one-on-one, the iron sharpening iron. Mm-hmm. You get a large enough group of people and inevitably somebody's going to fall through the cracks. Like that's just how life works. It's why Jethro confronted Moses when he tried to be the one judge of the entire nation of Israel after they came out of Egypt. He's like, dude, you're going to wear yourself out and them. So start appointing people over smaller groups and smaller groups and smaller groups. Jethro invented small group ministry. The priest of Midian. Anyway, but that's kind of the whole point is if you want people to be on board with the mission and on board with the vision and on board with growth, you get them plugged into the small group because that's how they build relationships with people. I mean, you think about it, that's what a family unit is. A family unit is a small group. And so you connect them with other small groups in the church called other family units, and you create a larger group. And that's how it grows. I mean, it sounds like overly simplistic, but there is a way to do that healthy, and there's a way to do that really unhealthy. And if you bring it under the truth that we find in Scripture and the way that Christ has instructed us and his followers and his disciples at the time, it's really about advancing the kingdom slowly over time. And that's what we've been doing.
Yeah. Let's just use us as an example, how we met, got connected and became friends. Mm-hmm. Was the fact that we both were in a Sunday school class at a church, got connected there. And of course, in a small group.
It wasn't very small, but
yeah, it was large, but it wasn't large as maybe some groups, but, And we were serving together, serving the same ministry together. So we
were doing life together.
Yeah. So all these elements, and again, the thing we again look at Christ's model. Mm-hmm. Let's just look at Christ. Take some time to really, and I challenge anybody listening, and I've challenged myself in the past to do this, is really study how Jesus discipled.
Yeah.
Look at the Gospels and study how he discipled. He called out 12
specifically.
Called out 12 specifically, mm-hmm. pouring into them, equipping them, and also pushing them out to do ministry.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing them out of ministry. And then he had his three mm-hmm. that he poured in even more in-depthly with. And yep. again, that's the model that I look at is, and again, we can, it's, you have your small groups, and beyond small groups is what I call discipleship groups, or you can call it growth groups. You can tie in what kind of name you want to with that.
Hit squads. That,
yeah. So that's, it's just another level of deeper discipleship. In other words, finding your three, mm-hmm. one to two people, okay, that you're pouring into, and you can go even deeper with. Where do you find those type of people? In small groups,
mm-hmm.
okay, in already current relationships. So how do you have current relationships? It means you're in groups to build relationships.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's just multi-layered of discipleship. And I don't think, and I think, again, when we talked about this even with Adam, that I do think that we talk about buzzword small groups, that we kind of overuse that word, and because, and to a sense of, this is how you should do groups. This is how you should, people should meet. Whether, like, the big thing was meeting in homes
mm-hmm.
with small groups, which I think is awesome. I do. I personally believe that there's a sense of vulnerability and hospitality that's found in hosting a group in a group in your house
mm-hmm.
Rather than a church. I do believe that, but at the same time, there is nothing wrong with meeting in a church building.
That's why the church built the building.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, there's nothing wrong with a Sunday school style group.
Outside of 9 o'clock a.m. on Sunday mornings?
Anytime. Like,
you heard it here, folks.
Yes. there's nothing wrong with that. And again, there was a big push, and even churches are on board with this. I know one church that completely changed. They had a Sunday school model church,
mm-hmm.
completely changed everything, did small groups, pushed everything in the homes to a point where all these older people who this is how they grew up in, this is right. what they enjoy, this is how they feel like they're getting fed, and that's, quite frankly, that's where their community is.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost forced to go somewhere else.
Which is sad because they're the ones we need to be pouring into the younger generations on how to be those people that are in the home.
Correct. And there's nothing wrong with both models are fine. Based off of your culture, based off of your, again, church culture, individual church culture, your town, community culture, your regional culture, all that combined. I'll give you a perfect example. Is that I took a class, a small groups class in seminary.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite classes I took in seminary. And I read a book, and I can't remember. I think it's Brandon House. I can't remember exactly who it was. Who was part of Marshall's Church in Seattle, Washington. Was it Seattle, Washington? Did I get that right? Maybe I got it wrong.
I don't remember.
Somewhere up there where it's like godless country. Mm. Okay. So their small group model I thought was great, to where you had a small group in a neighborhood and you were literally reaching people in your neighborhood.
Mm.
Okay. Which I thought was great. And I said, we should be doing this until I'm in a rural church in a small town. And I realized that doesn't work.
Dude, it doesn't work. This is like a pet peeve of mine. So many resources are out there for church and small group ministry and all that stuff. And it's all for urban settings. And you have to reinterpret all of it for a rural setting because it's so much different.
Yes, I agree with that. And here's the battle we all should struggle with, and we all struggle with, and who mm-hmm. are in ministry is. And this is, I'm not, I got friends who are authors, so I'm not picking on them, but I got good friends that are authors. But sometimes we want to publish books just for the fact to publish a book.
I got something to say.
I'm just being honest. And because I can't tell you, I got a good friend of mine who his church is a very big church, and they were doing some research on small group ministry. Mm-hmm. and they were looking, because they had the resources to do this, they were going to multiple churches and really, really studying, really looking. And what they found out is that all these guys who were all these seminars and all these conferences, pushing all these different aspects of small groups, and their own churches, it won't work. That's not always the case.
I feel like that should be a prerequisite. If you're going to write a book on something, your church should be doing it.
Yeah, and I'll give you a perfect example of this too, is I know somebody, again, I'm rambling. I'm on a rabbit trail.
Okay. Chase the rabbit.
But this is just another example of it. It's there's somebody I know who planted a church, not very large churches, but it's multi-sited within the same area. And he got asked to be put over a church planting stuff within, I don't know what you call it, the title, over the state. And state convention. Again, it was the Southern Baptist Convention.
Director of missions?
Director of church planting. Okay. Let's just throw that out there.
Sounds good.
And he's over it, but now all his church plants are slowly dying. In other words, they weren't sustainable. Mm. And so that's what I'm saying, is that just because you have people who are writing books, just because you have people teaching seminars, glean from them, take some of the good stuff, but also be very skeptical in the sense of not everything is going to work in your context. So don't think everything's going to work in your context.
And make sure you check it against scripture too, because we have a lot of fun, fanciful ideas on how to do ministry, and a lot of times they can get much more complicated than what scripture is said to do.
So, absolutely.
I think that can make things a little bit more complicated, but the other thing, and as soon as you said that, I had a thought and now it's gone. It just went bye-bye real fast, so I'll probably think of it sometime later, but hopefully the conversation that we had with Adam today was an encouraging one and gave you something to think about, maybe something to pray about and ponder for your own ministry context, and hopefully it was encouraging to you. We're really glad for y'all's patience. Thankful for that. We're glad to be back and putting up a new episode. And if you could, please take a moment to leave us a comment or star review so that we can continue to be there for people who are looking for fresh youth ministry content. And if there's a topic you'd like to hear us cover on the podcast that we haven't hit yet, we'd love to hear from you. So feel free to reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. We have a page and a group on Facebook, so you can join the group and hang out with other youth workers and powwow and converse respectfully about how to do youth ministry in different contexts.
Well, guys, stay tuned for our next episode.